Chapter 73. Vaughn called out the whole of the Hope PD for crowd control. Within 30 minutes, she had all four of her deputies and her brother officer and her watch commander and the desk guy all lined up on the western edge of Despair's last block. Nobody was allowed through. The state cops showed up next. Within an hour, they had 3 cars there. 5 more showed up within the next 4 hours. They had taken the long way around. Everyone knew there had been uranium at the plant. The state cops confirmed that the MPs had the road blocked to the west on a 5-mile perimeter. It was close to dawn, and they were already stopping incoming trucks. Dawn came, and the rain finally stopped, and the sky turned hard blue, and the air turned crystal clear. Like nerves after pain, Reacher had read once in a poem. The morning was too cool to raise steam off the soaked ground. The mountains looked 1,000 miles away, but every detail was visible. Their rocky outcrops, their pine forests, their tree lines, their snow channels. Reacher borrowed a pair of binoculars from Vaughn's watch commander and climbed to the 3rd floor of the last building to the west. He struggled with a jammed window and crouched and put his elbows on the sill and focused into the distance. Not much to see. The white metal wall was gone. Just a few rags and tatters of shredded metal remained, blown and tumbled hundreds of yards in every direction. The plant itself was mostly a black, smoking pit, with cranes and gantries knocked over and smashed and bent. Crushers had been toppled off their concrete pads. Anything smaller had been smashed to pieces too small to reliably identify. The office buildings were gone entirely. Thurman's residential compound had been obliterated. The house had been smashed to matchwood. The fieldstone wall was a horizontal rock field spread south and west like grains of spilled salt on a table. The plantings were all gone. Occasional foot-high stumps were all that was left of the trees. The airplane barn had been demolished. No sign of the Piper. Immense damage. Better here than somewhere else, Reacher thought. He came downstairs to a changed situation. Federal agencies had arrived. Gossip was flowing. Air Force radar in Colorado Springs had detected metal 15,000 feet up. It had hung there for a long second before falling back to Earth. Radiation-sniffing drone planes had been dispatched and were closing in on wide, circular paths. The rain was seen as a mercy. DU dust was believed to be strongly hygroscopic. Nothing bad would drift. Every contractor within 100 miles in Colorado and Nebraska and Kansas had been contacted. A hurricane fence nearly 19 miles long was needed. The site was going to be fenced off forever, on a 3-mile radius. The fence was going to be hung with biohazard signs every 6 feet. The agencies already owned the signs, but not the wire. No hard information was volunteered by the townsfolk. No hard questions were asked by the agencies. The word on everyone's lips was accident. An accident at the plant. It was second nature. A part of the hard-scrabble culture. An accident at the mill. An accident at the mine. Consistent with history. If the agencies had doubts, they knew better than to voice them. The Pentagon had begun to stonewall even before the last fragments had cooled. State officials arrived with contingency plans. Food and water was to be trucked in. Buses were to be laid on for job searches in neighboring towns. Special welfare would be provided for the first 6 months. Transitional help of every kind would be afforded. After that, any stragglers would be strictly on their own. First Reacher and then Vaughn were pushed steadily east by the official activity. By the middle of the afternoon, They were sitting together in the Chevy outside the dry goods store, with nothing more to do. They took one last look to the west, and then set off down the road toward Hope. They went to Vaughn's house and showered and dressed again. Vaughn said,
"David's hospital is going to fold."
"Someone else will step in," Reacher said. "Someone better."
"I'm not going to abandon him."
"I don't think you should."
"Even though he won't know."
He knew beforehand, and it was important to him.
"You think so?"
"I know so. I know soldiers." Reacher took the borrowed phone out of his pocket and dropped it on the bed, followed it with the registration from the old Suburban's glove box, asked Vaughn to mail both things back with no return address on the package. She said,
"That sounds like the start of a farewell speech."
"It is," Reacher said. "And the middle, and the end." They hugged, a little formally, like two strangers who shared many secrets. Then Reacher left. He walked down her winding path and walked four blocks north to First Street. He got a ride very easily. A stream of vehicles was heading east, emergency workers, journalists, men in suits in plain sedans, contractors. The excitement had made them friendly. There was a real community spirit. Reacher rode with a post-hole digger from Kansas who had signed up to dig some of the 16,000 holes necessary for the new fence. The guy was cheerful. He was looking at months of steady work. Reacher got out in Sharon Springs, where there was a good road south. He figured San Diego was about 1,000 miles away, or more, if he followed some detours. This is Dick Hill. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Nothing to Lose by Lee Child. Executive producer Kelly Gilday. Text copyright 2008 by Lee Child. Production copyright 2008, Random House, Inc. All rights reserved.